Hey, you guys. Time once again for Tomes of Terror, my little book review series that I've been doing on here for quite a while at this point. Here's an author that, again, I guess because I haven't really been keeping up so much prior to the last couple of years when I started reading a lot of new horror again, but I hadn't really been keeping up with a lot of new horror writers. So here's another writer that has written a fucking shit ton of novels and who is also actually has been the president of the Dallas-Fort Worth Writers Workshop, because he's from Texas, for a couple of years at this point, and yet I had never heard of him or read any of his stuff. And his name is Russell C. O'Connor. So I decided while I was going through my recommendations on my Kindle Unlimited subscription, and this came up and it was free to read. So I decided I would rectify this oversight. And the novel that sounded most interesting to me was one called The Jackal Man. Now, this book originally came out in 2009, I believe the first edition, but the edition I read, which I guess is the second or third edition, was actually published in 2016. I don't know what the difference is between the editions. I think the covers are different, but I don't know about the interior. So, because this is called The Jackal Man, you can probably surmise that this is basically a monster story. And I gotta say, if you're a fan of real fast-paced kind of more action horror that has like a pretty gory and the pretty high like body count and has a sort of like urban legend or small town legend, like rural legend type of vibe to it, then this should be like right up your alley, I would imagine. Like, if you like stuff about, I don't know, like monsters that are based on like Bigfoot or Sasquatch or something like that, where it's just like an urban legend type of monster, but turns out to be real. So, yeah, if you like that kind of stories, then you probably really, really dig this one. So, what we have, the novel actually starts with a prologue, which is sort of told as though it's an urban legend. So, in this prologue, it's only a couple pages long. There's two kind of teenage boys, and they've been out for a drive, and they're out past their curfew. So, they decide to take a shortcut back home, which is never a good thing to do in horror stories, but I digress. So, this shortcut involves them having to take this sort of isolated two-lane road that's right on the edge of town. And it doesn't really have a name, but all the locals just call it the Dark Road because it's basically dark. It has like a bunch of trees like hanging over it, and then it kind of opens up into a field. So it's like woods, and then it's like a field, and there's not really anybody that lives on it or anything like that. Now, nobody really takes this road after dark because everybody in town pretty much is afraid of this local legend, which is a monster known as the Jackal Man. Now, despite this thing being called the Jackal Man, it's actually not really like a jackal, as in it's not dog-like. It's not a werewolf, in other words. It's actually kind of more, I mean, according to the people in town that claim to have seen it, because again, it's sort of like a Mothman type thing where, although I kind of feel like more people in this town believe in it and have seen it than otherwise, but it's kind of like a similar kind of thing where it's like a small town and you have like this monster and like a few people have seen it and blah, blah, blah. So this monster, despite being called the Jackal Man, is actually kind of described as more cat-like. People say it looks kind of more like a big, like a cheetah or a jaguar or something like that, but tall and like usually walking on two legs, although it can run on all fours as well. So it has like a big long stripy tail and that kind of shit. And it has like these really, really bright, like glowing green eyes, like radioactive like green eyes. Now, these two kids that are in this car, like one of them doesn't believe in the Jackal Man, but the other one is like, "Are you fucking serious that we're driving down the dark road? Because what if the Jackal Man gets us?" And he's like, "Ah, that's just like a story or whatever." But obviously, because this is told like an urban legend, the two kids get killed by the monster. Like the monster basically jumps up, like their car, like turns their car over and or makes their car crash and then like rips their throats out, and that's kind of the end of it. So after this opening, which is very intriguing, then we cut ahead to like our main part of the story. And this happens some indeterminate time later. I don't know how many years it is later, but I guess it's like several years later. So the main part of the story involves our protagonists, who are the Stanford family. Now, the dad, Frank, who's pretty much the main character, like the son Willie kind of like factors into it too, but Frank is kind of like the main character. Now, he's kind of the sort of like abrasive dude, a little bit unhappy with his lot in life. Now, he's been working as a foreman on this mall construction project in presumably Dallas-Fort Worth. I think that's where the first part of the story is told. And this mall construction project is like way behind schedule. And he's afraid that like his ass is grass, right? Because he's really behind on this and he feels like he's gonna get in trouble. So he ends up getting a visit from the owner of the company, which is this dude named Lyles, who is kind of like, he's like the son of the guy that originally, built the company, and that guy just died. So this guy has your standard kind of like entitled rich boy kind of shit attitude, you know what I mean? Where he's just kind of like, you have to do whatever I say, but he's like that kind of like douchey character. So Lyles comes to see Frank, and Frank is like, oh shit, I'm gonna get fired because I'm so behind on this mall thing. But he's surprised that Lyles actually offers him kind of what sounds like, sort of, a good deal. He's like, okay, the company is building this housing complex, like in this little town called Asheville, which I think they specify is about 3 hours. I don't know if it's a real place, Asheville, Texas. But it's about 3 hours outside of Dallas-Fort Worth. He's like, yeah, we're building a housing complex out there. And the foreman on the job just got fired, and I think it's 19 houses, and he's like, a couple of them are done, but the other ones are in various stages of being done. And he's like, we really want this housing complex done by like the end of the summer, like by the end of August, and we think you're the guy to do it. He's like, so if you go up there and you take this job, you'll get like a big, huge bonus. And we even rented you like a nice house, like for you and your family to stay in. And, it'll be really cool. So Frank is kind of like, well, it sounds a little bit too good to be true. But Frank just pretty much jumps on it almost immediately, like without even asking his wife or anything, because he's like, look, my wife is out of work. She's looking for a job, but she hasn't been able to find anything, and we need the money. And also, he kind of figures maybe this will almost be, even though he has to work and stuff like that, he's like, maybe the change of scenery will kind of get our family back on track, because their family's been having like a lot of tensions and problems. Him and Trisha have been kind of at each other's throats. They seem like they're kind of sick of each other. She's been out of work, so she's under a lot of stress, and there's just all this kind of shit going on. And then their main thing too is that they have this 13-year-old son named Willie, who he kind of hit puberty, and then he started like dressing like a mall goth, and he started kind of, like he pierced his tongue and spiked his hair and has big JNCOs and shit like that. And he's kind of like causing a lot of problems in school, and he ended up getting expelled. So at this point, Trisha's like, I don't know what we're gonna do with him. It's like, we can't afford a private school. It's like, I can't really homeschool him. It's like, what the fuck are we gonna do with this kid? Because he's being a brat. They also have a younger daughter named Casey, who I think is maybe five, six, seven, something like that. Although she doesn't really factor into the story too much. It's mostly the main characters are kind of like Frank and Willie, and Trisha kind of comes into it, but it's not really from her perspective. When you're seeing things from certain perspectives, it's usually from Frank's perspective, Willie's perspective, or the perspective of like one of the guys in Asheville who's like a cop. So there's that. So they figure, okay, well, Trisha's mad because Frank didn't tell her, just like took this job, hey, we're moving 3 hours away, like without consulting her first. But he's able to like talk her into it. It's like, it'll just be like, it's just temporary, it'll just be like a vacation, it'll be fine, you'll see, and I'm gonna get like a lot of money. So she's like, okay, fine. So they make the drive to Asheville, and this is a really, really small, kind of pretty like rednecky, kind of like backward place, about 3 hours, as I said, outside of Dallas-Fort Worth area. Now they pull up to the house that the company rented for them, and they're like, wow, this is actually like much nicer than we, it's nicer than our house at home, and it's like, it's two stories and it's really big and stuff like that. So they're like, wow, maybe this will be like pretty cool after all. Now, when they go in the house, they do think it's a little bit weird that the former foreman, who Lyle said got fired, he had been living in this house as well, obviously, while he was working at the site. And they're like, that's really weird. His name was Wesley. Left Wesley Gammon, I think was his name. And he's like, and he left all his clothes here. Like, they go in the closet in the bedroom, and like all of the dude's clothes are still there. And also, he left a bunch of food. Like, so there's a bunch of food in the fridge, which has gone bad because he hasn't been there for such a long time. They're like, that's a little strange. I wonder where he went, like, without his clothes. But they're like, oh, well, what are you gonna do? And then there's also kind of a thing where Frank, like, goes out on the porch and he sees there's like a headless squirrel out there, and he's just kind of like, okay, gross. Like, live out in nature or whatever. So, but foreshadowing, Now, not long after this, though, even though, as I said, they seem like everything's like, oh, cool, and everything like that, but Frank soon begins to grasp the scale of the clusterfuck that has fallen into his lap, this thing that he has undertaken. He goes out to the site to check it out and discovers a few things that Lyle's failed to tell him. He finds out, for example, that the ground that the housing development is being built on is this really, really hard clay, which means that they can't just dig into it like normal. They actually have to have this guy who's actually like kind of a funny character, this old guy named Cracker, who's like missing a bunch of fingers and stuff, who's like a dynamite expert. And he's blown himself up a bunch of times. The dialogue in this is actually pretty funny. That was like one of the best things about it, was like this funny ass dialogue. But yeah, so they have to buy all this expensive dynamite and have to have this guy out there like blowing stuff up, like doing controlled explosions to in order to like dig the foundations for these houses because the ground is so hard. So he's like, once he finds that out, he's like, okay, I promised that we would have this done by the end of August. And he's like, and now I don't think there's any way that that's going to happen because that's like so much extra work. Not only that, he's finding it really hard to find a crew, at least of locals, that are going to work on the site because the field where these houses are being built is right along the dark road, which, you know, according to the locals, that's the Jackal Man's territory and everybody is afraid of the Jackal Man. So he's like, you know, we don't want to like rile the dude up. So, you know, the monster. So why, you know, we don't want you here. We don't want anything built out there. Now, he does actually manage through one of his supervisors to get like some like Mexican migrant workers, but you know, only a day or two after Frank gets there's like a really horrible incident involving a guard dog. So again, trigger warning for cruelty to animals because some bad shit happens to like some animals in this. But a really fucked up thing happens on the site, like having to do with a guard dog that they hired, and that spooks a lot of people too. So some of the people like walk off the job. So there's that as well. So it's just kind of like all this fucking deal that he has to deal with. Also, it seems like everybody in town is really hostile, and like not even low-key hostile, like overtly hostile. They're really not making a secret of the fact that, look, we don't want you people here. We don't want houses to be built out there. Why the fuck did they even buy the land? You can't even build on it. No one's gonna buy those. It's like, you know, because no one wants to live right in Jackal Man territory. So it's like, we don't want you here. You're fucking everything up. So everybody is like hostile toward him, toward his kid, and just everything. So it's like really, really bad. Also, as if this wasn't enough bullshit that Frank has to deal with, he also finds out that Lyles, who was the one who hired him to go out here and like build these houses, doesn't actually give a shit if the houses are done or not. I mean, it's basically kind of like, well, this was my dad's company. He bought this land or whatever. But it's like, they're kind of like, we just wanted somebody out there like to blame, like when the whole project goes tits up. And so Frank kind of got finagled into it. So he's like, so he doesn't really care. As much as Lyles is talking about, yeah, we have to have these done by blah blah blah, he doesn't really give a shit if it's done or not. And if it's a disaster, then all the better, you know what I mean? Now, there are a couple townspeople that are sort of friendly or a little more welcoming. One of these is a local detective named Shruff. So Frank kind of befriends Shruff, but Shruff is kind of, I mean, all the locals like him. It's like a very small town where everybody knows each other, but everybody's kind of like, oh, it's this guy again. Because Shruff, not only does he believe that the Jackal Man is real, which most of the townsfolk do, but he is like obsessed with proving it. And you find out later, like, why he's so adamant that it really exists. But so there's that. And he's sort of at odds with Frank, who has just come to the town. And I have to say that Frank, he's not a real likable character. He's kind of an asshole. He's kind of a dick. He comes into this town, and like, yeah, most of the people in this town are jerks, but he's kind of a jerk too. And he just like comes in and he's like, well, I can't believe like you people believe in this stupid urban legend, and this is like making my job like way harder than it needs to be just because all you people believe in this stupid crap, and obviously this doesn't exist. But you know, him and Shruff still kind of strike up a little bit of a friendship. Or at least, yeah, I guess it's kind of like a friendship, even though obviously Shruff like really absolutely doesn't believe in the does believe in the Jackal Man and is trying to tell Frank, you know, yes, this thing is real and it's out there and this is a real problem that has to be dealt with. There's also kind of like a wild card aspect. And it's like this really weird hunter type character, like who kind of looks like Steve Irwin or Crocodile Dundee or something. And his name is Deegan. And he just kind of like mysteriously shows up in town. And he's like, hey, he's kind of like, you know, the guy from The Most Dangerous Game, where he's like, oh, you know, I've hunted like all animals like all over the earth. And it's like, I know that the Jackal Man is in this town and it's real. And I want to hunt it because that'll be like a really good feather in my cap or whatever. And he's like, look, I'll even hunt him. Just, I'll keep out of your hair and I'll just hunt him. Like, you don't even have to pay me. I just want to do it, like, for the glory of it. So there's that. But he's kind of sinister, too. And you don't really know exactly what his agenda is. So he's kind of, like, creeping around in the background as well. So after all of that setup, it starts to get, like, this sort of escalating series of, you know, really violent, bloody incidents. People disappear. People get chased by what may be a monster. Willie, the kid, he kind of befriends these two other punk kids, and he starts getting into trouble. And so all this other kind of stuff happens. So all the scary shit, like all the people disappearing or turning up eviscerated or whatever, all seems to be centering around this construction site. And even though at first Frank is like, some human person must be doing this or like pulling the strings or trying to like fuck me over, and maybe Lyles is behind it, maybe Deegan is behind it, maybe he's doing all these things to like make me look bad or to like make the company look bad or to scare people, to scare the company off the land because the locals don't want them there. But as the time goes on, he kind of has to like maybe reassess his beliefs a little bit. Because as his friends and family kind of end up endangered, he kind of ends up kind of like face to face with something like really, really not what he, not what he believed in, not what he expected. So as I said, if you're really into, this is very much an action horror book. It's very, very fast paced. It's very action oriented. So if you like anything like that, that's based around kind of like an urban legend type monster. I mean, this is a monster that, you know, as far as I know, it's not like a real urban legend in the sense that, you know, that there's a place called Asheville that actually has this monster legend. So it's not like Mothman or Bigfoot or the Jersey Devil or anything like that, but it's similar, like it's along similar lines. So if you like something like that, but it's like it has an urban legend flavor to it, but like the monster, it turns out to be real, then you will probably be really, really into this. I actually ended up reading it almost the whole thing in a single sitting. I think I read like the first maybe like 10% of it like one night, and then like the next day I just read the whole thing like straight through. And it's not short, I mean it's not super long, but it's 400 something pages, so you know I read it pretty quick because it just moves along like at a really good clip. Now as I said, if you absolutely must have a likable protagonist, you might be in trouble, because Frank is kind of a douche. Like, you can kind of see where he's coming from, but he does come off a little bit like a jerk and a little bit arrogant. So there is kind of that type of shit as well. So it didn't bother me, but I can see how it might bother some people. The whole thing isn't from his perspective. A lot of it is. Some of it's from Willie's perspective, like the 13-year-old kid, and some of it is from Shruff's perspective, like the detective. So it's not just him, like, through the whole thing. But he does come across as, like, a bit of an ass. So, you know that going in. So, you know, if you have to have, like, a likable main character, then, you know, you might have an issue with that. Only other criticism, I think, I wish a little bit more had been done with Deegan, the hunter, because, I mean, on the one hand, I do like that they left the character kind of mysterious, but I would have liked slightly more, like, of his backstory, like, what, I don't know, I did, like, I guess I wanted his, like, motivation, like, maybe expanded upon a little bit more, because I was kind of like, wow, this guy is like, what the fuck is up with this dude? You know what I mean? Because he was like a really interesting character. And he's in it quite a bit, but I wasn't entirely sure like why he was doing what he was doing. I mean, it's sort of explained, but not maybe not as much as I wanted it to be. So there's that. There were kind of some, quite a few like spelling and grammatical errors in this, which you'd think would have been correct, because like I said, this isn't the first edition. The first edition came out in 2009, but you know, I'm not going to like ding the book too hard for that, because I see that in a lot of books these days, even ones that are published by big publishers. I guess it's because maybe they don't, maybe companies don't want to pay like to hire editors anymore, or the editors they can like are, you know, they don't pay them enough like for the editors to care. I don't really know, but there were kind of like a lot of spelling and grammatical errors in this, enough that I kind of like noticed it. But as I said, that happens in a lot of books, so I'm not going to get like too fucking annoyed about it. So there's that. But overall, this was just a really fun action-oriented monster story with an urban legend kind of flavor to it, which I really like. So if that sounds like something you'd be into, if you have Kindle Unlimited, you can read it for free, and obviously you can buy the paperback as well if you want to. And that will do it for this Tomes of Terror. I will see you guys on the next one. Bye.